said talk to me, damn it, or else I'm gonna throw you in the fire!
You stupid bitch, you filthy!
Welcome back to Flyover State of Fear. What is this? We have the OG Yusuf with us, and as always, Brian and myself. How are you guys doing?
Good, how are you, man?
Good.
Brian, I stepped into, like, mom and dad were talking, and now they have to pretend that I'm not here.
He got tricked. He was like, that sounds weird, talking about behind the scenes, talking about, oh, well, maybe we'll do this movie. And he was like, that's a good one. I was like, oh, you want to get on the show, Yusuf?
Mm. I was actually, at one point, I was surprised when you were like, and I'm watching it too. Like, days later, I was like, oh, okay, so you are joining this show. Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Always welcome.
Of course, I've never wanted to leave here. I've always, I don't know, the rumors are not true.
It was all
part of a storyline that we were building. The crescendo will come.
We just did a really good job of hiding Yusef's scandal, so people think that he just stepped away. They don't actually know why. We did such a good job. All our NDAs held up real good. So.
Changed the logos and all the things to just be Fear, but then he's still here. So he's like, oh, not a guest sometimes, but he's not like,
on the show. So the shareholders know.
Yeah.
He was disciplined properly.
Soon Fear is just going to literally be adjacent, be like, I don't know, we're talking about 21 Jump Street this week. There's a scary part in it for, like, a baby.
I know, it was a jump scare when Johnny Depp revealed himself.
Yeah. That counts.
Yeah, my dude wipes ad revenue gets deposited into my Cayman Island bank account. Nobody can trace it.
But no, well, I'm super glad to have Yusuf back, and I'm super glad to be back and talking about horror with my boys. Joe, we talked about how we were both in a bit of a slump.
Yeah, longer than I mentally than I anticipated.
I don't know, is it like against the law to admit on a horror podcast that you were like burned out on horror and you need a little break? Is that allowed?
No, because I think we mentioned the last like three episodes, but it's been that long. Almost like a 2 month.
And it's funny, it's like, but in the meantime, every time we talk about something, I could pick up 3 or 4 horror movies I watched. It just means I didn't need to watch one every night I did for 2 months, you know?
Yeah, they've been like peppered in there, but I think it's like more like the craving's the wrong word, like craving to be like, ooh, I'm going to rewatch Child's Play. I would just tweet it, like Child's Play 2 tonight, because that's comfort right now. It's like, that's coming back.
Yeah, I don't think you're allowed to be human on a podcast.
No,
it's getting a little bit weird.
Never drop the persona. Never drop, you know, always keep up the...
Guess what I do? 24/7. Goosebumps.
Yeah, guys. This is my only interest and my only personality trait.
I'm not trying to make my way...
You should be, like, actively insulted that no horror movie got nominated for the big awards.
Oh, my God. I can't believe they didn't. When Evil Lurks for Best Foreign Film, what were they thinking?
Yeah, I can't believe the movie where the lady's eating out of her kid's head like a bowl of popcorn didn't get nominated. That's wild.
I cried during that over something like Ironclad. Speaking of, I've been working my way through like awards movies right now. It's hysterical. Last night, Laura looked at me and she's like, this year I want to start trying to watch things that aren't complete shit and paying attention to them, and I'm enjoying them. That's what we, you know, I feel like we do that like once a year during this like stretch of like, these are all the bougie ass movies
that
out.
Hollywood told me are good. Yeah, so I'm like, watch them.
Yeah, we're good. You see May December? Pretty good. May December? Pretty good.
My rule has always been, I don't mind watching award movies that get brought to my attention, but I have to have genuine interest in them. I don't ever let myself get drawn into watching something because it has buzz, you know what I mean?
I'm not going to watch, like, Mastro or something like that.
Mastro? That's actually the reboot of Mastro. The Mastro.
the massacre.
Maybe I should. I need some culture.
Why don't you want to watch Master of Disguise? I think it's pretty.
Because you know why I saw it. I went to the House Get Made recording for Master of Disguise, so I've watched it like 4 times in my life.
Turtle. Yusuf, bleep that out where he said the other podcast name. I don't want to plug in. No free publicity on this podcast.
Yeah, Paul Scheer. Fuck.
We're not giving it away. Paul Scheer's got enough on his plate.
But
is anything horror crossed over? Do you have anything that you've been watching, Joe?
Speaking of the award stuff, kind of, I guess, like, adjacently, they're not too, I wouldn't call them horror, but they're definitely, like, in the genre. Poor Things was excellent. That is, like, it's a comedy more, but it has its full-blown, like, if Tim Burton made erotica.
Right, well, and it feels kind of like a Frankenstein. It has, like, elements of Frankenstein in it, right?
Frankenstein's
like,
kind of
the vibe I was getting.
It's, best way I could describe it. Is aesthetically, I'm just been calling it a very Tim Burton look, but like, you know, it's like steampunky-ish kind of conceptually. It's like Frankenstein, but then the base of it's like an elf or like a Barbie, like fish out of water, but like learning to be human kind of tale.
Yeah, isn't it like Frankenstein's Bride essentially? Like they kind of adapted.
Maybe. No?
To an extent, I think.
Yeah, I think
there's definitely a basis of that there. You can feel it just from the like some of the like visual choices and stuff.
Visual, but it's more.
I mean, Yorgos hasn't missed with me at least. So
I'm actually woefully underseen in Yorgos movies. I have not really delved into them.
So I thought it was excellent, but like I said, heart not really. It was more of like an erotic black comedy, but like aesthetically, like. There's some gruesomeness into it, but yeah, I would say it's Frankenstein in the way that, like the tone, like the aesthetics and tones of it. Sure. But as a plot and story, you're looking more of like Barbie for goths.
Yeah, Splash, but with a goth.
It's just fish out of water at the end of the day, and like a lot of nudity.
Right, like I get the impression that she like. Learns that banging is cool and then like finds herself through banging.
Kind of.
Good for Emma Stone. That's the kind of movie that's an award winner right there.
One of my favorite performances. Like,
when an A-list actress does softcore, that's award
winner. Some of it.
She's already done it. She already did it and got nominated for The Favorite. She and Olivia Colman get down.
That's cool. I do want to see a lot of that.
Yeah, and then the other thing that, like, once again, like, not fully horror, but I did see some horror put on their things is, I watched that Nick Cage Dream Scenario.
I want to see that one.
It was alright.
It's alright? They've been praising the shit out of that movie.
I'm not familiar. Is it what's on?
You have to rent it or something like that. It's like, rental. Everybody dreams about him, essentially.
Yeah, it's based off that, famous. Like, internet. The thing that went around the internet a while ago was that sketch of like everyone dreamed of this man, like you've dreamed of this man, and
it's like a creepypasta come to life.
Yeah, and it's like it's more of a dark comedy. There's some kind of creepy moments in it, like of just the dreams they try to portray. For me, as a movie, I'm just gonna be vague with it. The performance is great. It's a great Nick Cage performance. It has something to say, but I think it loses its plot and unravels, I think, more towards the end. Yeah, it starts off real strong. I would watch it. I recommend watching it.
It's kind of like me, man. I start off real strong and then
whimpers.
Splutter to the end.
Well, I remember.
What are you guys watching?
Yeah, I remember that this is a horror podcast, and people like to hear about horror movies, Joe.
Well, we're talking about the others today, so this is right in line with the...
It's true. The others is like a haunting, haunted movie. It's a very haunting. I finally got to see The Blackening, which was great. It was hilarious.
Hysterical. One of my favorites of 2023.
It's so really, my list really of funny. Movies that I haven't seen from 2023.
The O'Reilly's joke is like one of the best fucking written...
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in that. I rewatched John Carpenter's The Fog, which has been like a kind of a blind spot for me for a while. And I kind of like was always like, I was like, is this any good? I kind of like wasn't really sold on it. And then I watched it a couple times like in the last year, and I was like, this rips. I like this.
Yeah, you can check out our episode on this channel for John Carpenter's The Fog with Oh, no, I'm sorry. The Fog remake. We didn't cover The Fog. We called the shitty remake. The
Fog remake, bad. Fog without, remake, Fog good, though.
With Alan from Werewolf Ambulance. Fog good. Fog remake, fog bad.
Anyway, and then another revisit from a long time, a movie that I know I had seen a couple times that I even actually remember seeing in the theater in high school, Ravenous. You guys remember Ravenous? It's Guy Pearce, and basically he's like a, it's like colonial, or, you know, I would say a revolutionary era, maybe 1812-ish, something like that. And they're off in like a fort in California, small group of guys. And it's basically like a cannibalism movie. It's got the guy who's like the kind of super English guy from Trainspotting, who's like the guy with the mustache. He's like the main villain in it, and Jeffrey Jones in it. Yep, Jeffrey Jones is in it. So it's pretty good, though. Like I said, one of those movies that I don't know why, even though I could remember having seen it, didn't make much of an impression. So I wanted to go back and check it out because I saw some people praising it. And it was good. I don't know if it doesn't feel like a buy to me. You know what I mean?
Did you have you have the DVD? Is that how you watched it?
So you weren't
actually. I got this is another plug. I got it through my local library on DVD, Blu-ray, actually.
Nice. Oh, nice.
I'll
nice.
Try to remember to bleep that out.
Support your local libraries. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't plug the.
So
library.
You're saying that you weren't ravenous with the content of the movie?
Well, no, I mean, it was a good movie, but I'm not. I wasn't like in love with it. No. I guess my review was like, oh, I know, I realized why I didn't remember this, even though I'd seen it a couple times.
That's true.
Yeah.
I watched, due to my Christmas binge, I did Krampus. Krampus is always a fun rewatch.
I did Violent Night, too. I didn't know if that counted.
And I did Violent Night as well.
I did Krampus also, yeah.
Yeah. But the recent one that I did was I guess it's more sci-fi, but it's still, like, no one's going to save you, or no one...
Oh, yeah. I remember when we watched that. Also great. Another
that
movie,
movie
great
is like
so intense.
And like,
I'm sure we talked,
like,
about that around the time it first dropped.
Probably,
because I know we both watched it too.
It's probably really,
it's
the Butterfly
so well
Effect
made,
episode, which took like
And I'm glad, I don't know about you, I didn't know the gimmick going into it. So
no,
like,
me either.
By about, it was about 20 minutes in, I'm like, oh shit, there's no dialogue in this movie.
Yeah, I like that the only line is the line that, obviously I'm not going to spoil it, but I really enjoyed that creative ending. And that first, like, the opening sequence of that movie, not the opening sequence, the first half of the movie is stupid. So good.
Yeah.
The rest kind of slows down, so there's still, like, a lot of good beats in it. And it really holds its weight throughout the entire movie. But that first encounter is so well made. It's so honestly terrifying. Like, at least for my wife, that is my wife, that
my
she's
wife.
Legit scared of aliens and home invasion, like any normal sane human being would be.
Well,
that
I like
sequence
that they adapted like their classic gray aliens, but like in a couple different ways to make them creepy and scary,
horrifying,
and like do a couple
man.
Different
yeah.
things with them.
I,
that was fun.
You think Yusuf also hits on a thing there of like the invasions being scary, like the alien. I think we talked about this at the time. For me, it's so hard. It's so easy to make them not scary that when they are scary, it really fucking works. But it's so, for me, it's so far and few between that, like, no one will save you. It was so tense.
Yeah. It's really up there as one of my favorite watches of the entire year. Honestly.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Absolutely.
A lot of fun.
Real quick honorable mention, even though it's not really horror, but it's definitely gory. And you reminded me, because you were talking about movies with limited dialogue, main character of this movie also, I believe, only speaks one line right at the very end. And I rewatched Sisu. The Finnish movie about the gold miner who gets harassed by some Nazis and proceeds to massacre his way through them.
I would say
must watch for if you're like a hard R action fan who likes your brutal action stuff. Must watch.
Yeah, it's very well made. Very well made. I liked it more than Mr. Nobody, I think it is.
Which one
was that? Mr. Nobody, the Bob Odenkirk.
Oh, the Bob Odenkirk one?
Oh, that movie.
The Bob
awesome.
Odenkirk one was a little more silly. Like, it's a little more it feels more like a Bob Odenkirk vehicle.
Yeah. Of all the John Wick offshoots, I think Sisu is the best one so far.
Yeah, probably. But I bias towards Bob Odenkirk, but I also love the team up with Christopher Lloyd
that's awesome. Watching Doc Brown shooting a shotgun.
Yeah, and RZA. That's who it was.
RZA.
I said Common. I didn't want to be racist because Common is in John Wick. So.
Yes. Racist.
And he was also in something else I just watched. Oh, you know what? I think he was in Fool's Paradise, actually.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
So anyway, today, guys, everyone, they're on it. Whatever. This
is a good warm-up. Oh, good job, guys. Nice chat.
Good job. Good thing.
Good pod. We're doing some good pod.
We're talking about the others for another reason. Like recently, I got the Criterion, and I'm very excited when they. It was a Christmas gift. I was very excited when they released. Show
my clunky blue, my clunky.
I have that one too. That's
in contrast.
That's one of the double disc.
The double case with like two doors.
That's the Jay and Silent Bob. although it's a kind of a bummer. Like, you know, Criterion puts so much like. Thought and the restoration and everything of it. There's no special features except for commentary, and I'm sure that thing's like chock full of it because it's like a chunky two disc.
That's weird. It usually be like interviews and
essays. Yeah, I was surprised. I don't know if it's because it's the 4K or not, but you know, still have the movie and it looks beautiful.
This is that's a very good thing. Movie. Like I said earlier, haunting, and like part of that is the visual style of it.
It looks beautiful, and that's why we picked it. I was kind of like, I want to watch it and get around to seeing it. And so the others, 2001. Real quick, I'm going to read the synopsis here. And then just going to write off some facts.
I didn't know you did this. This is my first time on this podcast.
Also, we should say we don't usually warn up front, but I guess spoilers.
Yeah, just the whole movie is just kind of spoiler.
It's a 20-plus-year-old movie, but just in case. Spoilers.
And you know what's I so nice.
I wasn't in purity when this movie came out. And look at this beautiful beard. Imagine how long ago it was that.
That's a long ass thing.
I did not even hit puberty when this movie came out.
I me neither. I was
you guys. I was a man.
11 years old.
Yeah.
12 years old.
I had already had right one family. You. I'd already gone through my first family.
My introduction is...
you had already abandoned those three kids. Right. And...
I left my kids in a Sears, and I went and I caught a showing of this on my way across country.
And you're like, wow, this inspires me to create a new...
You went off
like,
to
war. I was like, Nicole Kidman's really on to something here.
I just need to make one tweak to her plan. No, so, actually, it's a good way to start. My introduction to this, though, I remember, like, I think my brother or someone saw this, like, my dad, because of, like horror movies. It was, like, that movie that was adjacently to The Sixth Sense, where it was, like, what a twist they came home with. Yeah. And then it was, a few years later, it was parodied in, I want to say Scary Movie 2.
One of the Scary Movies, they do
it's
the
It's two or three. Yeah, it's the veil pull off, and it's... And it's Michael Jackson.
Yeah, I think the two was mainly about ghosts and hauntings and demons. So I think it was two.
Others.
I can't remember. Scary. I just remember two has that basketball commercial joke in the middle of it.
Yeah, the end one.
It was
funny.
Three.
It's now funny, ironically.
The only thing that still makes me laugh, and I guess I shouldn't, is the tiny hand.
it's funny.
It's my strong hand.
I mean,
all the penises and vaginas in there. One through three of the Scary Movies has some really good bits. And this was in three, though. I remember that's. And I remember we saw that in theaters, but that was the height of let's make Michael Jackson jokes.
Yeah.
So they lift the veil. And anyway.
Classy. So, we were very classy in the early 2000s.
And then
guys.
A few years later, getting that double DVD from like Blockbuster pre-owned, watched it, felt mature. So that's what this really is. It's like an adult matured horror movie, right?
Yeah, it's like a grown-up ghost story.
Yeah,
it's you know, this such would fit, a good ghost you could, story. You could cut an A24 trailer for this just, so easily. Like, you could, you know, it would take nothing at all.
I will say,
I do think this movie got unfairly kind of rolled under because of the popularity of The Sixth Sense.
Yeah.
It got kind of dismissed a bit. I personally, you know, we don't worry about rankings, so I'll get out ahead of it. I love the others, and I've only gotten to, like, I was kind of like, yeah, it's okay. And then for a while, it was like the movie my wife really liked. And I just, you know, if she wanted to watch it, we'd watch it. But in the last couple times I watched it, I was like, no, this shit's good. I like this.
Yeah,
it's that. And it's also like, if you'd mentioned the A24 thing, I always like comparing it today. It's like, you know, the outcry of Tony Clutch, Hereditary, this and that, like the performance.
Oh, yeah.
Yo, Nicole Kidman should have been nominated for an Oscar for this.
She's the OG, Tony. OG Heather Hereditary.
Like, it's so...
Read that synopsis.
Yeah, sorry.
I was interested in how they're going to summarize this one.
That's why I did my spoiler warning, because like, the synopsis might spoil it right
in.
I think this one, as we all know, I don't read them, but from the amount of words, it looks beefy. Grace. The devoutly religious...
I didn't know her name was Grace.
Grace, the devoutly religious mother of Anne and Nicholas, moves her family into the English coast during World War II. She awaits word on her missing husband while protecting her children from a rare photosensitivity disease that causes the sun to harm them. Anne claims she sees ghosts. Grace initially thinks the new servants are playing tricks, but chilling events and visions make her believe something supernatural has occurred. This is the rare time I'll say they write too much.
Yeah, I was going to say, too wordy.
And it's also a little misleading, because this is they move in 5 years after the war, and she's not awaiting her husband.
Yeah, I was going to say, they've been there a while. I don't feel like...
Well, she is awaiting in the sense that she thinks, because she hasn't heard anything from him, despite the war ending, but they're still holding out for hope.
They're holding out hope a little bit, but you are at a point where, like, I definitely feel like that's waning.
Yeah, I think she knows and is just telling her children, because...
Yeah.
But, no, it's a good way to start. So, but that, I guess, a good way to lead into it, the movie does actually start beautifully, I think, with that like storybook illustration intro, and the music it's playing stood out to me this time more.
Oh, the score is beautiful in this movie.
But the intro score itself, it's not setting up you for like a creepy tale. It's more like fantastical, like whimsy to go with that when like. You put something over it with more of like, you know, screeching violins or whatever, or like somber. Insidious. It's gonna set you up differently. But that's kind of where we start. And before I pull out, I didn't realize how big of a hit this was. I don't really know box office this much.
Oh yeah, it did good.
This movie made $200 million worldwide. It's one of the highest grossing horror films of all time. I don't know if today it's changed. It's the highest grossing Spanish. It was the highest grossing Spanish film of all time.
Oh, because the director's Spanish.
It grossed $24 million in Spain.
Say his name, Joe. I want to hear it.
I don't want to.
Say
his name. All right.
Alejandro Amenábar. Yeah, he did the Sea Inside, that movie that broke Javier Bardem into mainstream.
Okay. Yeah, there's actually some really interesting things with this. Is the whole production is a Spanish production. The others comes from a peculiar cross-section of production cultures. It stars an Australian woman playing an English woman. It was written and directed by a Spaniard backed by Americans, set in Jersey, but filmed in Spain.
It was filmed in Spain.
Actually, that's actually a good wondering where it says. So all of these criterions, it always says the.
And it was produced by Tom and Paula, which I found interesting. I didn't know Tommy had that, because usually Tom, I could be ignorant, but mostly Tom Cruise produces his own stuff.
This was the last
when they were married, right?
This has the distinction
of being the last of Tom.
This is the last in of the of Tom's produced movies with Nicole Kidman
and Paula.
That sucks, though. Then he got out the door on a hit. You know, he made bank off this last movie too.
And then
what?
Nicole
Kidman. What year is this? This is 2001. When was Ice White Shot?
Oh, you think you're talking about?
99?
Eyes Wide Shut, yeah, 99. Oh. So this is the movie that's that, but the distinction at the same time, too, is the weekend the movie was being released, I actually didn't save this one, but I remember reading in the fun facts, either like the weekend or week after their divorce was finalized. And like, obviously, there was a big public, you know,
they have those famous pictures of her like walking out of the divorce proceedings and like openly celebrating.
Yeah, she's like, great.
It's just wild how I guess she must have signed so like an ironclad contract, even that religion. And I think mainly it's because she wants to be near her children, and because they're very deep into that religion. So she's probably like, I'm not touching it. I just want to be their mom, and I'm cool, Tom. Whatever you want to do.
Sure, I'm gonna go have Act Two with Keith Urban.
Keith Urban.
Hell yeah!
I'm just gonna be tall and sexy, and you be tiny and weird.
It'd be like my favorite performance of last year in The Northman. So good.
Oh yeah,
I the first three notes. I still have to watch The Northman, but my first three notes is like always going. Yeah, I always forget how good of an actress Nicole Kidman is.
I got called out by my mom like a couple months ago. I was talking about The Northman. I was raving about Nicole Kidman, how good she was. And my mom was all like, oh, you used to say blah, blah, blah. You used to not like her. I was like, okay, well, people can grow and change, Mom.
People change.
I was probably like in my early 20s. And
you're like, she just chased Meridian.
You know?
Yeah.
You know the one that I've never seen is because of the dumb poster of her? And the fake nose, the hours. I've never seen
it. Oh, that was a big like awards catch at the time, yeah, but I've never seen it.
It's just solely because of the nose. That's why I've never seen Maestro. The nose. The fake nose, not gonna do it.
I can't do it. It's like a fat suit. I can't watch it.
You should have hired Adrian Brody if you wanted to do that.
Jason Mantzoukas exists, all right? he can do things.
Yeah, he is musically trained.
I'm right.
Yeah, but this movie I remember watching it in theaters, and this one along with like Sixth Sense, I remember watching and feeling that, you know, that spark in the sense that, oh, it's like there's something more other than just being entertained. Mm-hmm. Like if you pay attention and if you follow along, you could either predict what's going to happen or just like be, oh, I see how they did it, how they set it up.
A movie getting something out of for paying attention, right?
Yeah. And watching it now, I was like, oh, maybe it's because I was 12 years old, and I think I rewatched it when I was like 18 or something like that, and I haven't watched it since. And I was like, oh, I'm gonna pay attention. I'm gonna see if it was obvious. And I feel like the credit to the writer is that they introduced people coming to the house. So you instinctively either think they're the ones fucking with them, or there's actual supernatural stuff because there are outsiders coming into the house experiencing these things with them. They're new people outside of the mom and the daughter. So and you don't think that they're going crazy or they're ghosts. Like, and then,
like the movie starts with, you know, the people showing up, and she immediately just like takes control and is like, oh, you're here for this. So like you just follow her lead. You're she's the lead of the movie. She's the mom. So she says they're here. So like you are naturally already like following along. And it just draws you right in.
And it's such a, I mean, let's jumping right to the end here. Cause we're talking about like, it's such a unique.
Well, you can find me on Twitter.
It's such a unique, what you're saying of the writing, it's such a unique take on the haunted house tale that even when you do come with, oh, the servants are dead, right? Like, right? I think that's the first kind of, all right, there's something up with them.
The thing I initially thought of is they killed the previous owners. That's what I thought.
You're not thinking, oh, like Victor and these other people and this witch and everything are actually like, there are also ghosts in the house.
Yeah, this movie actually has like multiple reveals. You do kind of start it off a place of like, if there's a ghost, maybe the kid was a victim of these weird caretakers who just showed up out of nowhere, what's going on with them, and then there's the reveal, and the more, you know, you find out more and more about what's going on with them, and then, you know, obviously the thing going, when her husband comes back, well, you know, we can get
I forgot Doctor Who was in this movie.
That's the first reboot, right?
What is Doctor Who doing here?
Yeah, he's just wobbling, trying to wind his way out of there.
Yeah, and Game of Thrones lady in the end, like, she's part of the seance, and I was like, she's super young. She's the mom of the Starks.
Didn't even recognize
I was impressed looking at IMDb, the lady who plays Mrs. Mills, the, like, head servant woman, who seems scary, but then as you watch it, when you know what's going on, you realize she's actually trying to be helpful and kind of, like, guide them along and, like, try to get them to get there on their own a little bit. But she's still working. She was just in the new Hunger Games movie, so good for her.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, this movie's loaded.
I actually watched that new movie, and I didn't recognize her.
Well, she's probably really old by now. She was probably, whoever the oldest lady in the movie was, that was probably her.
But yeah, so we get that set up, right? This trio comes, one's mute, one's the older lady, kind of the head, and one's like a groundskeeper, and they're all just, they're basically,
dictated by Nicole Kidman. She's like, you're the groundskeeper, and he's like, yeah, I guess I'm the groundskeeper. And that's literally kind of how it goes, you know?
Yeah. And she's like, I wouldn't take care of kids, but I can. Okay. Yeah. And, they basically come in and they're just like, we used to work here, but we fled and we're back. Do you have any work for us? And, you know,
the first hint that you should look at the servants differently is that she mailed something out, but it never left her box because she put it in the mailbox for the mailman to pick it up.
Oh, yeah.
And what she had mailed out was the ad to, hey, we need people to work here. And that's when you, as a writer, you're like placing in the nuggets that, oh, you should be suspicious of these people.
It's a very well-made movie
and obviously, like, the easy cop-out thing, but it's just so true, is the cinematography of this movie, due to the condition of the kids that they can't handle any light outside of, like, a candle. Yeah, it's a real condition. I saw it in the documentary The Benchwarmers.
the big curtains and stuff, it's like the candles movie is built to have striking lighting, you know what I mean? It's, like, everything's built to be very
it's truly the big beams of light coming through cracks
of the big dark curtains and
it's
stuff.
Caravaggio paintings.
Yes, yeah. That's what I was gonna say. It honestly feels like the cinematographer and the director got together and they were like, I like this painting, can you put it on screen? And they're like, all right, we can try to do that.
And I love the, like, actually early, it's one of the line written down, it's Nicole Kidman sets it up kind of that with the way of explaining what's going on in the house, right? But she says, we love our silence. And it really, I don't know, that the atmosphere where there is not much going on. You just hear the pitter-patter and the footsteps.
It's a quiet film, you know.
And then
it has a light touch.
Yeah, and then a little later in the movie, she says another thing, speaking of the light and everything. She was like, you have to treat the house like the light is water on a ship. This is a ship in water.
It's a great analogy.
Great way to describe that, because that is the intensity of, like you said, these big curtains, and you can't go in this room. And then she locks every door, which also adds this intensity to the movie.
And, like, the sound design of the keys and the doors locking, like, and opening.
The keys, the constant turning of the locks.
The scariest aspect of this movie is those doors, because I cannot imagine having to take a shit and opening and closing all those fucking doors on the way to the bathroom. That's the scariest aspect of that movie.
Like, I'm surprised there isn't even a real scene where it's like complete screaming and can't get out of the doors. And, like, I don't know, like, you know,
that's the other thing. That's a great.
There's,
that's,
like,
a great
such
point, because
restraint.
I feel like it's restraint. Like, this movie easily, like, I know that we made the joke of you could cut an A24 trailer, and you could, and then everybody would be fucking pissed because they take the few moments of pure action, make it seem like it's the fucking scariest movie of all time. And it's actually just a very quiet, subdued story.
I will be fair. I don't know if you guys remember the ads for this movie. They could not resist doing the little girl veil reveal.
Oh,
in the
I remember.
Trailer.
Like that she was young.
Fully
I remember
in the trailer.
Yes. I remember that.
But mommy, I am your daughter. You know, that's like. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Nicole Kidman. I would put the whole the light is like the water, and the, you know, the house is the ship, and the light is the water. I put that analogy right up there with the one they always use to describe a black hole in like every sci-fi movie. They're on par with each other. Very good. Very descriptive ways of, yeah, you fold it up and then you put the thing through.
Yeah, you put the pencil through.
But, you know, I mean, also, like, I mean, just setting up the creep factor, right? The only thing these fucking kids do is recite prayers and play with marionette dolls.
Well, and especially the little son is a real little English dweeb, like sickly little weasley looking little
creep.
I thought that kid was a ghost. I was like, that's the ghost. Get it.
I feel like the daughter, she was like on the line. She never crossed over to bad. I feel like she's as close to a good, smart ass kid as I've seen on movies in a while, at least. Like,
yeah,
she's
pretty good.
Like, she stays
every now and again, custard.
Yeah, but you feel like, a kid, a rebellious teen would actually talk this way. Like, she doesn't go overboard to be like, okay, that's an adult talking.
Sure,
that's not a kid. But, I really like the aspect of her questioning purgatory, especially due to the fact that, you know, they are technically in limbo or whatever you want to call
it. Oh, no, this movie is purgatory. I mean, like, the ending proposes of, like, what's purgatory.
Yeah, the idea of, like, and I get the impression, too, that, like, the little girl cottons on to what's going on faster than Nicole Kidman. Like, by the time Nicole Kidman figures out, the little girl already knows. And, like, Mrs. Mills has been kind of, like, slowly reeling them in with, like, you know, well, what about this? And what about, in ways to kind of just get them to question what they're all like already questioning. But the idea of a religious ghost is so funny to me. I mean, like,
yeah.
I'm a ghost.
No, not just a religious ghost, but a ghost that needs to study. You know, like, even in your purgatory, you need to read your lessons and write out, and your mom is going to critique all the things that you've wrote.
That's why also just Mrs. Mills is like, okay, keep reading that.
Yeah,
that's,
okay.
Yeah, all right, whatever. Go nuts.
Good for you.
Like, that scene between the little girl and Mrs. Mills is hysterical, because she's like, yeah, okay. Because, I mean, at first realizing it, that they're not dead, it just seems like, okay, clearly the caretaker has a gentler hand than Nicole Kidman, who's like, no, I've had her doing this punishment for 3 days straight.
Yeah.
Because this is the way I was raised.
Yeah.
I
feel like the good reveal for me was the seance. It's not that it's because there was multiple reveals, obviously. One, your ghost. Two, there's the ghosts that you're seeing are actually humans. Three, the caretakers are ghosts too.
Mm-hmm.
And then four, you killed your children. So that was it was just onions.
In like the reveals. Yeah, like, you're there in the most unloving way possible. What I attributed to, like, Laura walked in later and like kind of saw the ending. I'm gonna explain then. And I said, I think she killed her children because once finding out her husband had died, and those kids were probably so hard to take care of with the light sensitivity thing. Right. And they were probably scarred up, I'd imagine, too. Like, they probably...
I think they hint to the fact that... But because I feel like she killed the caretakers, too.
No.
No, no, they say they died of, like,
they
typhus
died, like,
or something.
80 years earlier.
Yeah, they're long since...
So they're literally coming
they
back
probably,
to the house.
I want to say Miss Mills probably witnessed what happened. You know what I mean? She probably was the ghost there, saw what Nicole Kidman did.
They were just there. They were just another three in purgatory in that house, and the whole ending is very much of...
The beginning,
we could be a family here and keep the children, like, keep the, you know, the ghosts away, or the humans away.
Yeah, it must have been, like, just, like, the seclusion of it. She must have gone mad. Just
she went mad. I think she went mad.
I think you nailed it. It's the loss of her husband, plus coupled with the extreme stress of taking care of these children that have this special needs kids, and all by herself.
In the darkness, just hold up in the darkness.
Right, being out by yourself, alone. No support by yourself. But I do think the movie, like, literally, especially
after hearing mommy all the time, mommy, the very
beginning is the moment after. Like, that's all. She doesn't remember anything. She's just like, they were playing. She's like, I did it. And then all of a sudden, you were playing in the pillows and everything was fine. So I feel like right after that is like, then that morning is when we see her come down and meet the caretakers, because they're just now. They can see each other because they're all ghosts, you know? So, like, they're about to meet, and she just, because she's so fresh, literally like a newborn baby ghost, just like, you're here for the job because I'm a regular person, and, you know, like.
I'll crack into a little bit of that. There had been some time in between because the new family had moved in, and they had been hearing and seeing these things, and that's why they called a medium. Because at the that end piece, the human woman turns and goes, we've done it your way. We've done everything. Yeah. And I guess, you know, the father's way or whatever was call a medium in, get to the bottom of this.
Yeah.
And it was like, no, fuck this. We're doing the Eddie Murphy. We're moving. Get out. Okay.
Yeah, but I think to Brian's point.
So I think, Brian, I think you're right. I think it's like fresh, but I think it's like a few months maybe.
Ghost time moves different too. Like
that's what I was gonna say. Yeah, like you don't know how limbo works time, but I think to Brian's point, and obviously in hindsight is very obvious. Obviously in hindsight is very obvious. That's a beautiful sentence.
You nailed it.
Yes, slam dunk. The beginning of the movie, she wakes up screaming from her sleep. Yeah. So essentially, it's like her coming into death. Like she died. Has these
night terrors when we first really meet her. It's, you know, the time that makes complete sense.
I feel like a lot could have been happening in the house, but while, you know, and even Miss Mills says at the very end, once everything's all settled and they're like, she's like, sometimes people will come and you won't even know. Like there'll be people coming in and out and you won't even know it.
Because Miss Mills talks about we've gotten rid of others in the past. Mm-hmm. Meaning, like, that's who, and that's what's great also about the title. The others ain't the ghost; it's the humans. Yeah, absolutely. It's the
people invading their home, and that's what Nicole Kidman at the end is like. This is our home. Yeah,
that's why I assume that she killed the caretakers as well, because it kind of felt that line where like, oh, we've gotten rid of others before. I felt like this is not the first time that they've tried to awaken Nicole Kidman. Like almost like she's in a loop. Like Ghost Nicole Kidman kills Ghost Kit and then restarts that loop. Maybe. And that's why she's... That's
but they find the death photo and it's dated like the late 1800s, right? It's like...
When they were like, when do you want to reveal the gravestones, felt like they've done it before.
Yeah, I could believe that like it's a Shutter Island situation where like Nicole Kidman kind of has to keep reawakening to the idea that she's a ghost and keeps kind of like cycling through.
That would be a good part of it too. It
Alejandro.
Just you know, there's a
get him on the phone.
You'd be the only one who can understand it because the commentary track on the Criterion is in Spanish.
Oh, that's incredible.
You can read subtitles like every
commentary subtitles.
There's subtitles for the commentary, that'd be awesome.
But no, the I just think like Miss Mills and the caretaker and the other one, Lydia, I think her name is.
Yeah.
I think they're also just kind. They're like, we could help this family.
Right, I think that's what you realize. That's another reveal, is that not only are they ghosts, but they're nice ghosts. They've actually been, that's what I mean when I was talking about earlier. Like, you feel it in Miss Mills, especially in the conversation she has with the little girl. She's kind of trying to lead her into like a therapist does. Like, she wants her to figure it out for herself. She knows what she needs to find out. But she doesn't want to just hand it over to her. She wants her to get there on her own. And she's kind of guiding her, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I fully agree. They're like kindly ghosts.
Yeah, and like, yeah, they're so creepy as shit. I mean, the way they walk out of the mist and reveal themselves to the two children is kind
of
like,
oh, I love when they get sick of Nicole Kidman's shit. That's what I was going to say.
They were kindly ghosts and they were going away along with it. But after Nicole Kidman whipped out the shotgun, she was like, they were so snarky and they were so like, okay, bitch. Whatever. Yeah. What are you going to do?
I think I've had about enough of this.
Yeah, fuck you. Yeah, here's your keys. And when they were standing on the window, they're like, you know what's happening, right? And she's like, get away from me. And they're like, okay, we'll see you later.
I did want to, before, I do want to jump back a little bit.
Yeah, there's a lot of some meat in this movie.
But I do feel like it's something we can jump around because basically it's all like, it's regular haunting stuff, really. It's like, the little girl is seeing someone in the house. The curtains are opening when they shouldn't be. You know what I mean? It's pretty standard haunted house stuff. We don't need to follow the structure.
We don't need to follow structure. But there's a really good filmmaking, like horror things in this that are like this movie's equivalent of jump scares is the way the light hits those paintings in certain areas and things that looks like someone's standing behind them. They got me a few times during this.
Yeah, if we want to just talk about some very effective moments in the
movie. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Effective moments, because you said it's all basic haunting stuff.
The whole thing where they're talking to Victor, when the little boy and the little girl are in the bedroom talking to Victor, and they're like, this is our room, get out. And then Victor opens the curtains, and you see him, and he's out of focus, but you see the curtains open, you can see somebody running and opening them. But you know it's not either. That's a very effective moment. I'd put that almost as scary as the scene in Signs where the alien walks by. Mm. Like it's just very tense.
And you see the different hand and like pajama on
when they
the boy's hand.
And the voice, you can kind of be like, yeah, she maybe could be doing that voice.
It's also great because you don't. Yeah, they film it away. Her back's to that. The voice is going. Like I said, she could be fucking with them. Because later on, she does she does do a couple different voices later on when she's just playing by herself.
I do enjoy the reveal of no curtains. That sequence, like the way that it's shot, because the score picks up and then you really feel that tension because they hammer it in. They hammer it in. The fucking curtains. Suddenly, no room has curtains. There's no fucking.
Not only they're not open, they're down. They're gone.
They're gone. This is such a good review.
I did make one note of like why wouldn't she just obviously because you ghosts at the house different, like just paint all the windows black at that point.
Truly.
I mean, yeah. But
and have like one sunroom for yourself.
Yes, what get that one room where she goes to take that vitamin D.
I also really like the scene with the little girl's drawing. Where she makes the old lady very ugly. What are these numbers? Like, this is the number of times I've seen them, and it gets the old lady, and it's like 14. You're like, oh my god,
so like, that's creepy, so
freaky. I love
14 times, and the ending reveal of, well, it's because that medium's really good at her job, and she's able to get in 14 times, like playing the big, like you said, the big trail. The trailer moment.
I like the reveal that the little girl possessed her.
Yes.
Yeah. Because that's what they say that's what they say in the seance. Uh-huh. Like, let's get the hell out of here. One of the ghosts already possessed her, and you're like, oh, that's what was happening in the. That's why she was like, "Mommy, I'm your little kid," and because she was possessing her body.
She's a little girl. She don't know what she's doing in that regard. She's seeing that. So.
And I also love the reveal. I love the slow reveal that to these people in this house in the seance, Nicole Kidman is like a Resident Evil villain. Like she shows up, like you imagine being the old lady possessed by the little girl, and then ghost Nicole Kidman like grabs you and is like, get out of my daughter,
ripping out papers, shaking the
ripping up papers, throwing open the curtains. She's probably smashing dude's fingers when he's trying to play the piano. She's like slamming the piano down and stuff. I love like
oh my god, it even...
is so fun for me to like think about. Is like,
am I dumb?
She's
tonight?
The main. She's really the big bad guy in this.
We're haunted by a 6-foot Australian doing a London accent.
She's scary and hot.
Please, you've never looked better. Am I dumb for not thinking that, like, when the piano was playing, it was because the people were living in those rooms and she was slamming it? Like, never million years. Also, like, she's also this like urban legend of this house. It's a woman who shot herself and drove
the Amityville story.
She scared the shit out of that little kid when they went into the storage room. All we're watching is just a strict mother with a kind heart. Like, that's all it seems. Like, she's strict, but she does have a kind... You know, she's doing her best.
But she really loves her kids. Oh, wait, no, maybe not.
Because it's been quite a bit that I actually forgot not the big twist ending, but... Because they easily could have chalked it up of, oh, she wasn't that bad of a mother like that. The Germans were coming into the house and...
The kind of like suicide, the Tom Jane. She pulled a Tom Jane. She's like, better for them to die.
Brian, we're on a roll. We're on a roll for the big theme for this month.
Well, unfortunately, she's not getting off. She ain't beating the allegations on this one. Unfortunately,
what's the next movie where a parent kills their child?
When Evil Lurks has some children.
Yeah, it's got some brutal kid deaths. Surely.
There's plenty of it to go around, that it's no spoiler for you. We already did Sinister. That's not parent. Anyway. Super creepy. There's also other good reveals, like you said, like when you said the numbers and the drawing, the reveal of there's an old woman, not just a family there, and I think she's with, like it's so not even given to us that there could not be more than Victor and
But then there's the old. She starts, like I said, with the drawing, revealing that there's like more. It's not just Victor. I was also gonna say, and I think what makes not only this movie but The Sixth Sense also hold up so well is that their twists are layered. That there's more to them than just one reveal. I've gone on record. I've really enjoyed movies like High Tension, but like it's kind of a little bit more one trick. Like they get that one turn and they do it and it's fine. It's great. It's fun. It makes for a good reveal. But these ones have like, there's like a little bit and then a little bit more and then a little bit more. And then by the time you get to the end, you're like so deep into it. And I think that's makes them stand up a little bit better.
Yeah. They are the ogres of twist movies for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you guys think about the outlier of the movie is Doctor, as you said earlier, Doctor Who.
The husband showing up. Yeah, I want to talk about this too.
It's the most out of place. It's not bad or anything, but it's the most out of place part of the movie.
I would say it comes the closest to breaking the reality of the movie before we get to the reveals. It's done pretty well, but it comes pretty close to fucking up the reveal.
Yeah,
if you ask me, like,
because you almost want because they give us the reveal that at least maybe Nicole Kidman and the kids are dead when the grounds crew's like, she'll find out soon enough and sees the graves, right? Like, that's pretty, but you. I don't know if this is too, like, on the nose traditional. When she starts walking in the fog, she goes, oh, but the fog will get her. It's almost like the infinite loop. Like, you want her to walk, and then she'll just see the house again.
Well, it's Beetlejuice rules. You're in a bubble, and if you leave the bubble, But I get the impression that maybe he left, like, how did they find it? Did they both leave their bubbles at the same time, and they happened, and they just meet in the mist, And then he gets to come back with her for a minute, but he can't stay there. It's like impermanent.
I feel like
he was so impersonal about being there that maybe that was the one thing they wanted as a family, that their intuition was to part of the death cycle or something to bring him back.
That was my other thought, was like, maybe he actually, and this is actually his moment of death. Like, he's dying now. And in his moment of death, kind of Jacob's Ladder style, he gets to come back. And in those last kind of, like, and then when he goes, when he returns to the battlefield and he's just gone from the house, that's when he actually goes. And then he's stuck wherever he's at. Oh, I mean, I don't know. Again, I'm just speculating.
No, maybe.
Maybe supernatural rules, like ghosts have connections to certain...
Nobody watches those shows, you say.
I watched 3 episodes before filming this.
I started another Sopranos rewatch. So.
No, yeah, I feel I'm like ghosts have like connections to certain moments in time, certain places. So, kind of like why the groundskeepers were able to enter that house is because they describe it as being one of the best places they've ever worked to. Mm. So they have fond memories, and they have like
they probably died there too, though.
Yeah, that's why I keep saying they killed it.
13 out of 15 people died there. From tuberculosis.
Oh yeah. Oh.
That's they give us that history that like a that whole house was like ravaged or serving.
Well, it was like I think it was maybe a ward. Like they used it as a TV.
Oh, maybe. But I think his like that whole scene and him coming back and once again another gorgeous shot of the fog and those trees and like.
I feel like it was worth the fight. The fight gave Nicole Kidman like a moment to shine in terms of like acting, but I do agree that that's where you start the fuck why is he here
how's he just gonna show up from the war out of nowhere and then just be gone
with
again
nothing
like, just yeah with nothing not even not a pack not a bag just wandered
no,
off
no
he had like a little
no.
like satchel
yeah but like had, usually rucksack. People come like they looked like they came from war and they were dispatched.
But it's the way he showed up and it's everything. It's, I don't know, it has to be a cultivation of her mind or her being able to pull him through, maybe through heaven or hell, because he is so disinterested of being there.
Well, I think he does say that he wanted to say goodbye to his kids and wife, and that's why
he
was there.
You know, they chalk it up to, it's Wikipedia or whatever, but they chalk it up to, like, shell shock, right? That's what we're supposed to see.
Right. Then he's disoriented from being at war. Yeah. He's got PTSD or something. Yeah.
Yeah. The common term, PTSD. But
he got a quickie before he went off to Ghost War, I guess.
Yeah, he went, hey, you know, his heaven was getting a, you know, bed and one more time, I guess.
Do you think she got pregnant and she has a ghost baby in her?
Oh, wow.
That's the sequel. Alejandro, call me.
Oh, no, she's going to drown that one in the tub.
We can't take care of this one.
Then it's a double ghost. It'll be a double ghost. A ghost of a ghost.
A ghost of a ghost.
Now, I don't know. I'm trying to think of other like standout scenes or questions I have from this movie. Because it's such a complete movie. One thing it was going around Twitter today. It was like, you know, what's the perfect, like, or what's a great 80 to, like, 85-minute movie? This isn't, obviously, that time frame, but
it was an hour and 40.
It's an hour 40.
And a brisk great, hour 40.
It's a great run time. It doesn't, speaking of the 8, comparing to these, the 8:24 would be this. There's, like, the movie should be called Restraint, because there's such restraint to not even just in pacing of story or even acting performance. Like, no one's doing a bad job here, but they're also like being respectful of their audience, being like, we know you're not dumb.
Yeah, it reminds me of Laberinto del Fauno or Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah.
In that movie as well, like even though it has like big moments and like the man with the eyes and stuff like that, it could have been like over the top or rambunctious with his sequences, but he also shows a lot of restraint, and it is also a very mellow delivery of these are the facts and this is our story, and if you are in it, you're gonna enjoy it. If not, I'm sorry, you're gonna get bored, because we're not gonna start going ping with fake jump scares and stuff like that.
Well, you could do so much more jump scares with the the human ghosts.
Yeah.
Like, you do so many more scenes of, and you're seeing that, and then and here's the witch, and like,
you could almost in the background, and there's like, someone walking around.
Yeah, you could like recreate almost like the thing with seances, right? You could almost like recreate like the ending of Drag Me to Hell, but in reverse, and like, or whatever, and then have the big reveal. It's like, it's yeah, Yusuf, you're nailing it with it. It's just like, it knows what it is. It's also, if you're paying attention, you're on board. You're into it.
Yeah.
Well, and it also, it feels like a classy horror movie, right? Oh. It feels like it's made, you could sit down and watch this with like your grandma, and she would be like, this is a nice period drama.
This is a straight up like perfect classy haunted house film. It's like right up
and,
there with like,
and like you said, haunted and haunting.
Yeah, it's right up there with The Changeling.
Yeah.
And like what I would say is another like classy haunting movie, you know, like,
yeah, no, it's like, I think it's cliche, but
you Session can easily Nine.
See this movie coming out in 1975, and you, it wouldn't feel out of place.
Yeah, and yeah, I'm a fan. I'm glad we, you know, were able to revisit this, and you know, hopefully, it says right here, planned remake. Hopefully, the COVID killed that thing, because it says April 2020.
Yeah, let's scratch that.
We some company acquired the rights to it, and they plan. I'm sure doubt it'll happen. And then like
it'll Universal, probably be some straight to, or it'll be some straight to streaming turd.
But what's the remake? It's just like, it says putting a modern setting. This would fucking suck if this was like in modern setting in today's remake world. Is let's put it in the 70s.
Yeah.
Like, this would suck.
It's funny, they gotta do a modern remake, but they can't do it when they're cell phones, so they gotta cut themselves off at like the late 90s.
Yeah, imagine, or like, you know, if you're doing the war motif, it's like the Iraq War, but at the same time, it's like, why aren't these kids talking about Limp Bizkit?
You know? That's my favorite thing. That is like, I cannot wait on this Sopranos rewatch to get back into AJ's new metal phase. Slipknot jacket.
I found out
AJ really, really grows into one of the worst characters ever fucking movie.
I found out that was all Robert Eiler's actual clothing. Awful.
It probably was. I like I really, on my last rewatch with when I watched with Harrison, I hate AJ. AJ's one of the worst characters on television.
Fucking sucks.
But I love Robert Eiler's performance of AJ because it's so real. Like, he is just, he embodies that the shittiness of that character so well. I got to give it up to him.
Yeah.
I guess if we're talking about Sopranos, we must be about done with the others.
Yeah. I mean, do you guys got anything to add to the others? Like, I think I've gushed about as much as I've could. No. And so, like, given it, we've given it some, like,
I mean, honestly, it's so good that I didn't take any notes. Like, it's just,
I also didn't take notes. I've watched it a bunch of times. I knew what I wanted to talk about.
I stopped at, my notes stop at, which is pretty early, piano is playing.
Well, you find yourself, I'll tell you what, that's happened to me a couple times. I get engrossed. You start taking notes, and then you just find yourself watching the movie, and you're like, oh, I didn't write anything else down. Whoops.
But I'll remember every bit of it. And
because it's so good. It'll be in my mind.
It's a little kind of round this out. I said I bought on a Criterion, and like the movie nerd or the collector nerd in me gets excited when a place like Criterion releases like more horror stuff.
Sure.
And I was so pumped, like truly, when this got announced, and because it was like, ooh, Christmas list, like that is such a great, unique pick that isn't like, you know, no one's fucking talking about the others, like, you know, ever. Yep. So I was super happy about like at the same time I picked up Freaks and picked up Christmas Freaks, Todd Browning's Freaks and Don't Look Now, which we're supposed to have Von Harris returning for him at some point to talk about that.
But, good movie, I like it.
Yeah, never seen it.
Which one is that?
That's the tiny
person.
That's the Donald Sutherland.
Where the big reveal at the end is that there's a small person.
Wait, what?
I think I watched that one time. I was never seen it. I was not impressed.
I've never seen it. So this sounds hysterical.
I would watch, but hey, I would watch it again, and I always love having Lon on. He's a very smart guest.
First episode he ever came on was Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and he was like, oh, so we'll reach out to him for a fourth time, third time? Anyway, guys.
You know what? Why am I here? The man's life.
Yeah.
Why am I here, Brian? Why am I here?
Oh, why did we?
Why are you?
Why are you here? Why is my brand new Macho Man toy from Christmas on the shelf? Why did it make its way down? Yeah, a while back I commissioned Yousef. I roped him in. I wanted to do a little bit of a wrestling mini series. I'm an old school guy, so me and Yousef are gonna have some wrestling related content coming your way in the next couple weeks. So if you're a fan of us or of wrestling or of us and wrestling or of this show or of our old shows, you should maybe tune in for that.
If you're a fan of me, why?
Yeah, check that one out. I'll be excited to promote it.
We have a name TBD. I don't know.
Yeah, name
TBD. But we're definitely doing Beyond the Mat. We're doing Hitman Heart.
Wrestling
we're doing
with Shadows.
We're doing a few.
Self-Destruction of the Ultimate Warrior. Look forward to that one.
That's the only one that I've never seen. So
that's a very interesting. I'm excited to talk
Call me when you do Vision Quest.
Oh, I do love Lunatic Fringe. That is a great song.
All right. Yeah, guys, as always, a pleasure. You know where to find everyone. And stay frightful, all. Bye.
Welcome to Flyover State of Fear.